Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Robots Are Coming. Today, I'll be interviewing Dan Sachs, who serves as the executive director of the Polsky Center for Entrepreneurship and Innovation at the University of Chicago. I am Ken Hinn, your host with The Robots Are Coming. So let's get started. So, Dan, can you tell me a little bit about yourself and your role in the Polsky Center?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, first and foremost. Happy to be here. I started out as an entrepreneur in hospitality, actually, of all places, not in technology. After about 20 plus years in that space, I decided I wanted to get off the entrepreneurial hamster wheel and got involved in higher ed through a random series of activities, actually. Started teaching at a university in Chicago. And while I was there, the head of the business school actually said to me, you know, you should think about getting your doctorate in business. And I just said, well, why not? What the heck? So I started that journey. And 3.5 years later, I ended up finishing up there. And while I was there, the school is DePaul University here in Chicago. While I was there, I got involved in several different programs at the business school and found it fascinating to be able to leverage my experience as an entrepreneur and my experience in the real world to apply that alongside the discipline I learned in my doctoral studies to moving innovation forward at an academic institution. And so when the role at the Polsky Center came up, it seemed like a natural fit. And the Polsky Center at the University of Chicago oversees all the innovation and entrepreneurial activities at the university and contributes significantly to the entrepreneurship endeavors at the two national labs the university manages, Argonne National Lab and Fermilab. So that's quite a broad mandate, as you might imagine. And we run 75 distinct programs focused on entrepreneurship and innovation. We have several accelerators, both in the sort of more traditional entrepreneurial space, but also in deep tech, including quantum technology. And we house the Office of Technology Transfer. So all the patenting, licensing, and out-licensing that occurs at the university runs through the Polsky Center as well.
Yeah, so it seems like the Polsky Center is doing a lot of work in particularly quantum tech, even the life sciences. How do you envision the future of technology, Dan?
We could spend hours on that. I think, you know, from the University of Chicago's standpoint, and certainly our perspective at the Polsky Center, is that the economy globally is more and more dependent on the not just technology as a whole, but really deep, what we would call deep technology, which spans, of course, several different fields, to drive innovation into the future. So in the broadest case, that's something like quantum technology, which is probably still 5 to 10 years to market at best, to data science, machine learning, AI, and medtech, as you referenced. And I think there's just an acceptance that to be relevant in the world, you have to be able to take those ideas, the sort of basic research that occurs at a top level university, and use it in a way, apply it in a way that can be valuable for society and to the benefit of mankind. I know that sounds a little cheesy, but that's really what our goal is. And it's because we recognize that the world is not going to exist fundamentally without that kind of innovation coming to the fore. It's a funny contradiction because, as I'm sure you know, 85-86% of all entrepreneurial efforts and all innovation comes in the form of single small businesses. But it's really the Teslas and the Apples and you name it, that drive significant global economic change across the world. Yeah,
and certainly in the Silicon Valley, you have companies like Apple, Google, and Facebook really dominating that space. And I know that for a fact that, you know, here in San Francisco in the Silicon Valley, there is a lot of that tech coming to innovate and changing the landscape of tech in general. I was wondering, you know, Dan, you work out in the Midwest, out in Chicago. Can you tell me a little bit more about the current state of innovation and startups happening out in the Midwest?
You're not suggesting we're flyover country, are you?
Hopefully not.
No. I think, you know, clearly there is a robust ecosystem that exists, not just on the West Coast, but on the East Coast as well. You know, Harvard and Stanford do pretty well out there. So we think of ourselves as the anchor to the Midwest. They're probably some of our friends and partners and sister and brother institutions around the region would take issue with that. But I think what you find in Chicago that you don't see in either coast, because of sort of, you know, the cultural Midwest heritage, is that there is a sense that we're all in this together. It's a much more collaborative environment. So, for example, here's a good quantum accelerator. It's called Duality, which we launched last year. We just matriculated the first cohort and started the second cohort. That's a collaboration with the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana, Argonne National Laboratory, and P33, a local organization here in the city that's focused on really highlighting and shining a spotlight on businesses locally. And so, you know, those are collaborative efforts that you don't often see in other spaces. And what that demonstrates is that it's not about the me, but it's about the we in the Midwest. I think that's really what differentiates us. And as a result of that, businesses, especially startups, find that proposition, that, you know, not as quite as cutthroat proposition, very attractive. And so in spaces and in technology verticals where we have specific expertise, there are a lot of opportunities to really build out infrastructure that's valuable and that exceeds what exists in other parts of the country. Quantum's a great example of that. We're probably not, if not the leading, one of the leading hubs for quantum research. And we've got tons of startups in that space. And there's a broad ecosystem. The government's supporting it. The governor supports it. The city supports it. We have space. There's just a lot of ways that make it much more attractive than some of the shiny things that you see in Silicon Valley or in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
And do you think that Midwestern NICE will help out the culture of entrepreneurship at the University of Chicago and the University of Chicago School of Business more broadly?
Yeah, I do. I mean, the University of Chicago School of Business is certainly a well-regarded. Booth is, you know, last year was the number one business school in the country. So, I think we are able to, and I don't say that because we're doing something that's so different or so much better than anybody else, but we get a lot of really smart students. And those students want to be engaged in efforts around technology that are next generation, that are pushing the envelope, and they can add their experience and acumen to really support a high level of engagement with these founders of new technology companies. And that's the really the special sauce in many ways. As you look across the landscape of universities in the country, in most cases, the business school is separated from the innovation hub. Whether it's an engineering school or a medical school, whatever it is, those two, because it's the nature of academia, those two bodies don't always play nicely together. But we had a vision, really Michael Polsky, who's our sort of namesake, had a vision about 5-6 years ago that we were stronger together than separate. And so having us all under one umbrella creates this environment where there's all this cross-pollination that's amazing. So we run a program at Booth called the New Venture Challenge. It's a business accelerator program. And we've been running it for 26 years now. And many household names like Grubhub have come out of that accelerator that people know. But this last year and the year before, the top placing company that this year that received over $650,000 in investments was a pharmacological company working on a cure, a diagnostic for cancer of the mouth. So it was a bunch of faculty researchers who had developed this diagnostic and three business school students who worked paired with them to launch this business. And now it's in, you know, I think it's in phase one or phase two testing, and it's on its way. So those kinds of activities only happen when you are able to play nice, as you said, together and leverage all the resources that are available. And I do think that's something that's special about what we do at the University of Chicago.
Yeah, and it seems like a lot of students, whether it's students in the law school or the business school, work with a lot of the technologists, scientists, and faculty of the University of Chicago. So from your perspective, Dan, how do you view the collaborations between, you know, firstly technologists and business or lawyers to ensure that a lot of the technological companies disrupt, innovates, and embarks on the changes in the future?
Yeah, well, so that's another, we could spend all day on that question. It's a great question. I appreciate you asking it. I think there are a couple different ways to square that circle. One way is to think about, well, what do we do? What's our special sauce that helps us be successful? What have we found that works well? And part of that is really thinking about how to create networks, right? There are lots of accelerators out in the world, tons of different programs. They're all, I mean, I'd like to think our faculty and our method is the best, but everybody's doing a great job in that part. It's how do you create strong networks of support, whether they're in venture or partnerships with companies or business liaisons who can really help put you in a position as a founder to be successful. So that's one piece, right? That's sort of what we consider on some level our special sauce. But the other part is even pulling the onion back before that and thinking about how do I look at the technology and understand how it has value in the marketplace before we even start launching a company and thinking about retiring in Bali and making $1 billion. What is it that I'm delivering that is a value proposition that's unique and makes sense? And when you're thinking about that in the context of, it's one thing to think about that in the context of a CPG product, right? Or a SaaS, you know, platform. You can sort of noodle through that pretty quickly. But when you're talking about technology and advanced technology, sometimes the basic research and the ultimate application are two very different pieces of the puzzle. And so understanding at a fundamental level, what we call here the front end of innovation, understanding what that pathway looks like, even at the earliest stage, is really critical to any technologist or any founder's ability to actually provide an outcome that can be applied in the real world. And that's the real challenge, right? Because tons of products, tons of research, tons of innovation ultimately doesn't go anywhere because it doesn't fit the marketplace. And what we try to do here before we get to that other special sauce stuff is try to identify what that front end looks like. How do we really understand you're doing this work in your lab? It sounds really interesting. How could that actually play out? So we are also a node for the NSF iCore program, which is all about customer discovery and, you know, sort of really identifying whether there's a market for your product. And so we run this stepladder approach with our innovators. They go through an iCore program. They go through some other programs. Ultimately, they go through a mechanism, if they continue to survive, that will help fund them so that they're really fully ready and able to launch. But none of that goes anywhere because, you know, as well as I do, most startups end up on the cutting room floor, that you have to stack the deck as best you can along the way, right? It's sort of this scale. And you want to put more and more weights on one side of the scale, as many as you can, small, big ones, however they work, to get your startup, your idea, your technology out to the marketplace. And that's a complicated activity. But, you know, we're one of the nice things about the Polsky Center is that we're all on the same page. We're all rowing in the same direction. We all have that same mindset, that same goal in mind. And the agenda is... fortunately for us at an academic institution, isn't because we're trying to make $1 million, although that's nice when we do, but the agenda is really to solve big problems.
And on that note of solving problems, I was wondering how the Polsky Center and how UChicago booth and UChicago students solve problems, because as someone who is involved in Berkeley Haas's Skydeck program as an alumni, we also, as an accelerator, we solve problems through, you know, customer discovery, through a lot of going through a lot of iterations of our product, and also going through like the Y Combinator program, which is another accelerator. They also solve problems too. Like, how does the UChicago program differentiate itself from all these other accelerators?
So I would say on the one hand, we don't. You know, Y Combinator, Berkeley Haas, Stanford, MIT, we've all got a really strong, robust program, right? We're all talking about front end. We're all talking about customer discovery, value propositions, business model canvas. I mean, you name it. We're all singing from the same songbook. I think what differentiates our programming from others is that because we're completely cross-functional, and because there are no barriers between what somebody at the business school is doing and somebody at the medical school is doing and somebody in the molecular engineering school is doing, we get great synergy, and we have a extraordinarily deep network. So in many cases, in other institutions, the kinds of people you can connect with are limited to the vertical you're in, right? The sort of area of expertise. That vertical might be a school like Haas, or it might be an industry, depending on what your technology is. For us, we don't have that complication. So I might have a venture capital firm that has invested in a CPG company through Booth and the New Venture Challenge, and we can leverage that same venture capital firm to help support a quantum technology company that's at the front end of hardware for quantum computers. Because, I mean, sometimes those VC firms are in different spaces, but we can make those connections. And that VC firm, while they may not be an investor, they may know somebody else who would be an investor. And so the network becomes extraordinarily broad and deep. And in my experience, that network has a significant impact on outcomes. And the other part of it is, you know, these companies all need money. They all need funding. And so we have a very, very robust sort of suite of funding mechanisms. And one thing we learned a long time ago is that whenever we provide, not whenever, it sounds categorical, but in any kind of significant way, whenever we provide funding in a significant way, and I would say writing a check of 50K or more, we expect the startup to raise that much money at least from an outside source. So, you know, you get take money from a Ycom, or you take money from Haas and Skydeck or Harvard or wherever. If you don't go anywhere, nobody's going to come and, you know, cut your knees off. But if you have external funders alongside our money, then all of a sudden it's a little bit more real. And so the founders are incentivized with a little bit more urgency than they might otherwise be. And so the combination of all those pieces, again, it goes back to that scale and sort of stacking the deck. I think that's what makes the experience at the university and at Booth in particular a bit different from some of the other programs that are out there.
Great. And you know, the Booth, the Polsky program itself is within Booth, and it works a lot with the other departments of the university. So another question I had was, how do you view your collaborations with the law school? If there is any.
There is. We work a ton with the law school. You know, everybody, that's the beauty of being at, well, when it works well, that's the beauty of being at an academic institution, is that anytime you have an attorney or a prospective attorney who is interested in supporting entrepreneurship and the many facets of it, which might be intellectual property protections, corporate governance, you know, equity investing, there's so many different areas. If we're collaborative and we work together, then we are able to solve those problems together. So we end up working well together just on that practical level. And then there are other types of innovation that occur. Somebody at the law school who might have an idea about an innovation, a technology innovation, either, even. And we have a sort of platform on the Polsky website that is a two-sided marketplace. Half the side is for inventors or innovators, and the other half is for people who want to support them. And folks can sign up and they matchmake there. And so I talked to, we have a program, let me step back. We have a program called the Collaboratorium that we run twice a year. And that's a program where anybody in the university who has a legitimate, and we sort of try to filter a little bit around legitimacy, a legitimate startup idea. It doesn't have to be fully fleshed out, but you know, it's something of substance, can come to Booth. Again, we do it in the fall, we'll do it next month, and then we'll do it in the winter, and meet with a couple hundred interested Booth students. Everybody gets QR codes and everything. And then there's all this matchmaking that goes on. The inventors stand up in front of the group and they talk about their innovation. They have an ask what they're looking for. They're looking for a couple of school students, this. They might be looking for a programmer. Who knows what they're looking for to flesh out their idea. And then we have a reception afterwards and everybody connects. And so last cycle, there was a guy, a student from the law school, who was looking to develop an app that really helped to make the legal documents more easily accessible to low-income people in, I think it was South America. And so, you know, there are a variety of pathways for people to become engaged with the Polsky Center and with Booth students that don't necessarily just involve the blocking and tackling of the legal profession, the tools of being a lawyer, but that allow lawyers who are interested in innovating to also engage with students at Booth. And again, that's sort of a manifestation of just the culture in general, which is one that's super collaborative, because we're in it to build the rising tide that lifts all ships. We don't play favorites.
Yeah. And do you think that, you know, based on what you've said so far, do you think someone who's, let's say, an up and coming lawyer, up and coming programmer, or business person should pack up their bags from the Silicon Valley and go and join the, I would call it the Tinder of a business?
Totally. I totally do. You know, what's exciting is that, I mean, again, I can't speak to Silicon Valley or the East Coast, but what's exciting at the University of Chicago in this moment is that from a philosophical standpoint, the university has embraced the idea that this kind of innovation is a prerequisite for a successful institution to exist. So nurturing this innovation is part of the table stakes of being at the top of the game. So, for example, this fall we'll be launching, not yet announced publicly, but internally, a data science accelerator focused on machine learning, AI, and all the other manifestations of data science. And, you know, that's an extraordinary opportunity to leverage the skill set of undergraduate students, grad students, faculty members, to generate this kind of real upflow in data science, which is an area where we're super strong, just like we're super strong in quantum technology and med tech, et cetera. So we start, what's nice is that the university is endorsing and standing behind the Polsky Center as a collective, not just at Booth, but as a collective across the university to help drive more and more innovation. And that's pretty cool. Like, it's, you know, for me, this is my job, my day job. It's pretty cool to be involved in that. And I'm really appreciative of that kind of support, because it not only allows us to engage faculty and students on campus, but for example, like with the existing Duality Quantum Accelerator, we have startups that participate that are outside of the university ecosystem. So we have a startup in the current cohort that's from Sweden and one from the UK. And they're coming across and they're here in residence for a year and they're going through our programming and incubating on 53rd Street in Hyde Park, Illinois. I mean, who would have dreamt that 10 years ago? It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And who would have dreamt that, you know, even now, right? So Dan, how do you view the future of technology 5, 10, 15 years from now? And how do you view, you know, Polsky Center's role in that?
So I it's funny because before I came to the University of Chicago, I would have watched you know, any number of futuristic movies and thought, that's ridiculous. Like, that stuff is never going to happen. Or if it is, I'll be long dead and gone before it does. It took about a year at the University of Chicago, and I came to realize that it's much closer than you think. And so, you know, I keep referring to quantum technology because it's such an area of interest and of strength here at the University of Chicago and at the national labs here. But that is going to be game-changing technology when it's ready to be commercialized. It's like where we were with semiconductors before semiconductors existed. It's the dawn of the internet. You know, everybody talks about it in different ways, and it's going to be messy, and there are mistakes, and there's some, you know, companies that'll explode and nothing will happen. But ultimately, that will spur a completely new methodology and technique for the transfer of information. So that's extraordinarily exciting. So I'm very bullish because I recognize that despite all the shortcomings of and privacy concerns and threats from other actors around the world and all these other things, which are completely legitimate, at the end of the day, I think these advances really do make the world a better place, at least where I sit at this early stage. You know, they may turn to be Dr. Evil somewhere down the road, but right now, where we are, where we sit at the Polsky Center at the University of Chicago and at the Booth School of Business, it's all positive. It's all good. And the innovations are coming whether we like it or not. Like that's the train has left the station on deep technology innovation. It's only moving faster and faster over time. And so you either need to be on the train or off the train. And we're completely committed to being on the train. And that's our position at the university and at the Polsky Center is how do we create more programs? So we just announced, not even publicly, internally, a new leg of our table that's going to be called Polsky Deep Tech Ventures, that's solely focused on really commercializing this next generation of technology. So that's how serious we're taking it. We're starting an entirely new stack of programs and infrastructure to support them, because we recognize that that's the future. That there will always be CPG companies. There's always going to be SaaS platforms. There will always be innovation in those spaces. But if you think about where the world is moving in the next 10 to 15 to 20 years, it's in deep technology focused on a variety of spaces. It could be climate change, it could be AI, it could be quantum, med tech, you know, next generation vaccines. I mean, there's lots out there, but it's all happening. We're not heading in the other direction. We're only going one way.
And with all of these advancements that's been happening in Chicago and the rest of the country, do you think that technology will be automating and taking away a lot of the jobs in the Midwest? Because, you know, you've heard of empty factories out in the Midwest because of robots or these new AI are taking away some legal jobs.
I've heard of there's this new podcast out there called The Robots Are Coming. I hope.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
What do you think of that, Dan? And do you see it happening? Are you, you know, taking into that account when you're making all these programs at the University of Chicago?
So we are, but each new industry vertical requires. They're not independent of a workforce, at least at this. So the workers are doing different things and they require different training. I mean, that's a huge challenge for us even right now, is how do we surface enough quantum technologists to satisfy the need, the current need, let alone the need, you know, 50, well, not 50, but let's say 20 years from now. And I think that ultimately, yes, of course, the economy will shift and some jobs will transform into others. I don't think on net the shift will be so substantial that we won't be able to accommodate for it. And the gains that technology will bring will offset. I mean, it would be nice to think that technology will allow us to live healthier, better lives just as human beings, that will be wellness will continue to be championed. I'd like to have the technology allow me to continue to do my job and work, maybe instead of 60, 65 hours a week, maybe I could work a 40-hour work week. That would be nice. And still do well. And so, you know, there are trade-offs. It's not a zero sum. But I do think that on the whole, you know, assuming good actors, that we benefit as a society.
All right. Well, that reaches the end of our podcast right now. And I just wanted to thank you for your perspective on everything that we've talked about, from technology to the Polsky Center, to your own experiences. So I just want to thank you for coming on to the show, Dan.
It was my pleasure. It's great to talk to you. I'd be happy to chat more anytime.
All right. And thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode of The Robots Are Coming. Next time, we'll have more professors, more directors of entrepreneurship speaking on tech and entrepreneurship. So make sure you subscribe to The Robots Are Coming. I'm sure Dan, you know,
I'm all over it.
Whoever you're listening to, and tell all your friends and family about it too. Thank you so much.